We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Monday, Tuesday, we were cool. Wednesday, I found out about you. Caught my heart by telling lies. You weren't what you advertised. But silly me to believe. Was unique. When I'm there, you put on a show. You mini-sode.
That was so high for how early it is.
I know. And you never said, let me take this down the octave. You said, I'm going to persevere.
I owed it to Allison Iraheta to do it in her octave, frankly.
Absolutely.
It would have been a disservice to her, to the entire music industry.
Absolutely.
If I had just sung it like any person with any sort of sense would. That was Friday, I'll Be Over You. Thank you to a friend of the podcast, Kelsey. Also, my real life friend for like over a decade, mm-hmm. Kelsey, for suggesting that. Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Are you ready to get in this minisode? Minisode 70. Yeah. I have so many jokes about the number 70. I won't even tell you them because they are name wraps.
I'm like, me, honestly, we like, there's so many, like last week we could not think of any jokes about the number. I have so many this week that I kind of like have to put a cork in it because like, we're never going to get to the emails.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, you know, I don't want to like start saying 70 jokes and like, you mm-hmm. know, not say someone's favorite or like, honestly, some of them are like kind of a little too like intense for me, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, like a little like raunchy.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, that's not my style.
Yeah. And I think it is true. It's like you don't want to like show favoritism in a 70 joke, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's got a favorite 70 joke. Everyone is like, this is the 70 joke that I love the most. Mm-hmm. And if we don't, like, say we were to say like 30 70 jokes, like I guarantee that the 31 that we did not say is a listener's favorite and it's going to hurt their feelings.
Absolutely.
And that.
And I'm not here to hurt feelings at all.
Exactly.
It's not happening. So let's just not do it.
I agree.
That being said, who are you?
I'm Janet Vandergraaf. And do you need anyone? I don't need anyone. And what about the love of one man? What do I care about the love of one man when I'm adored by millions? Do I need to be so gloomy?
No.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred. I am here. My brain went blank. I am running on very little sleep because a fun fact about me is I have insomnia. So my brain couldn't think of anything, but I am a mini Gleek. Who are you?
I don't even know. I'm here. Fun fact about me is I don't have insomnia, but I do work really late and then oftentimes have to work very early the next day. Who does that? I have one job. Why are they scheduling me until freaking midnight? And then having me come back at 11 a.m. I understand that's like, there's like 8 hours in there for me to sleep, but that's so fucked up.
No, I like not having time between shifts to just like decompress is terrible. And like sleeping doesn't count as decompressing to me because like your body
needs to do that. That's a task.
Yeah.
I love it, but I still have to do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pretty fucked up if you ask me.
But, no, that's sucks.
Yeah, it's okay though. Happy to be here. But I'm also a Gleek. And did I say my name?
You?
Lena.
I truly don't remember. So there we go. Well, there What's it up, is. Everyone? That's Lena. I'm Ian in the Minnesota of Madness.
Welcome. Yeah. Let's party. You know, I've got a bunch of emails from a bunch of our friends. Do you want to hear them? Well, when I say hear them, I mean you're going to f***ing read them, bro.
But you think I'm not going to hear the words I'm speaking? I'll still hear them. I love to plug my ears when I'm talking because I don't think that I should have the experience of hearing my own voice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that should just be reserved for everyone around me.
Absolutely. Well, plug your ears and get ready for our friend Molly.
All right. Hi, Lena and Ian. Merry Christmas. I hope you're having an excellent snowy holiday. This is Molly Sheher coming to you again from Copenhagen.
International listener!
If you recall, last time I wrote in, I had just moved here and was extremely anxious and stressed that I was not ready to live alone or be on another continent, but I'm happy to report that I'm 3/4 done with my semester abroad and have been having a great time and definitely learned a lot. Yay! But enough about me. Let's talk about Glee for a minute. As always, when Glee shoehorns a plotline about being Jewish into a Christmas episode, I have lots of thoughts. One of the first emails I wrote to you guys is about Season 2's Christmas, and I have been waiting to share my thoughts on this one ever since. It can be argued that the writers did actually try to give a proper Hanukkah plotline to the Jewish characters and not completely ignore their identities. They have Puck swoop in to save Jake in a moment when he is specifically being bullied for being mixed race and Jewish, and Puck uses their shared Jewishness as a way of bonding with his brother and showing that he should be proud of his diverse identities. Perfect. Love that. The reason this still feels so off to me is that the writers choose the absolute most surface level and stereotypical aspects of Jewishness in Hanukkah and didn't even attempt to include any of the beautiful real traditions of the holiday. Now that I think of it, if I knew absolutely nothing about Hanukkah prior to watching this episode, after watching it, I would know that there's a Jewish holiday called Hanukkah, and it's at the same time as Christmas, which is not necessarily true, and that the song they sing is associated with the holiday. Correct me if I'm forgetting something, but I'm pretty sure that's it. The song they sing is a fun children's song often taught in kindergarten. It's originally in Yiddish, and in my family, my grandmother, whose first language is Yiddish, always sings the original version for us at some point during the holiday. It has no religious significance and isn't part of any traditions or rituals. A Jewish Frosty the Snowman, if you will. A great song, though. Very cute, very fun. If the goal was to have the brothers bond, bring their mothers together, and eventually get Puck to move back to Lima, I assume this will become necessary in future episodes, but I forget, then it would have been more effective to have them engage in Hanukkah rituals together. The scene would show the audience that they are a family capable of having special moments together despite and thanks to their shitty father, accomplishing the same goal as the scene at Breadsticks did, but making it more powerful by adding this Jewish element that sets the Puckermans apart from the rest of the world and their bullies and gives them something unique to be proud of. And they have some great bonding rituals to choose from. The main part of the holiday is that every night at sundown, your family gathers at a window in your house and lights a Hanukkiah, which is a candelabra-type thing with 8 candles for the 8 nights of the holiday, and you place it in front of a window as a symbol of pride to the world that you're Jewish. It's always a nice bonding moment, at least in my family. It's also traditional to eat fried food on Hanukkah, such as jelly donuts or latkes, kind of like a hash brown but better. So they could do that and have a heart-to-heart while stuffing their faces. Makes for great television. There's even a tradition of playing dreidel, which is a gambling game where you spin a top and instead of money, you play for fake chocolate money. So up their alley. So all in all, it's just sad thinking of all the potential story fodder they had that could have been good representation and a more powerful storyline, when in reality, they chose the easiest way out by mentioning that it's Hanukkah a few times in passing and singing a children's song about it. I would also be remiss not to mention the infamously Jewish Rachel Berry. I have a theory that they are trying to erase Rachel's Jewishness even more in these later seasons because she is no longer a nerd. Hear me out. Jewish characters in media are often presented as nerdy, uncool, unfashionable, unpopular, and, if they're men, unmasculine. Puck and Jake are an exception for that. Good for them. Think of Jacob Ben Israel, Ross from Friends, Howard from Big Bang Theory, Ben from Never Have I Ever, etc. If they are if they ever are hot and popular, it's in a Jewish American princess way or a rich obnoxious gets everything they want or throws a tantrum way. See Ben and Shira from Never Have I Ever season one. Now that Rachel is no longer a child loser nerd, they have to make her a good, pretty, nice Christian girl who is so excited, squealing, to have her first Christmas in New York. They even have Bert give her an ornament as a gift and say not just Happy Hanukkah, but also Merry Christmas as he gives it to her. We all know this is inconsistent because Bert is a respectful king and would obviously get her something thoughtful and sweet and not a red ornament that is not only the most boring and basic one ever, but that also erases her heritage and religion. Oof. Okay, rant over. Now some nitpicky details. Hanukkah in 2012 was December 8th through 16th, so not when this episode was taking place and not at the same time as Christmas. Puck saying, paraphrased, if you're a Jew or a gay, you pretty much got it made in Hollywood. Not a good look. Perpetuating the anti-Semitic stereotype of Jews controlling Hollywood, the media, and the world. Sue's exposition at the beginning about how in Love Actually there are many storylines that all tie together, and then the storylines in this episode do not tie together at all. LOL. Why does Jake call his brother by his last name, which is also his own last name? I don't know if you guys have people in your life who go by their last name. I sure do. But never in my life have I heard their sibling refer to them by their shortened last name and not just their first name, especially in front of their mother. Very weird. To end on a positive, though, I will point out that going by a shortened version of your last name, especially if your first name is Noah or Josh or David, is one of the most Jewish things I've ever seen. Good for them. Thanks for reading my insanely long rambles. Good luck getting your car out of the driveway. It was a heavy snowfall last night, so I hope you're ready to start shoveling. It's currently Tuesday, so I can't wait to hear your thoughts tomorrow. Hear you soon, Molly. Molly, thank you so much. I have been up all morning. It snowed so much in New York, you know, Christmas snow, which is great, like really gets me in the the mood for the holidays. But God, just the streets and the drive are so icy. There's 6 inches of snow. You can't go anywhere. Oh, my goodness.
I absolutely brought my car to New York. That is not, you know, no question. Of course I did. Absolutely.
New York infamously has bad public transportation. There's no way to get around this city.
Absolutely. You have to drive. And there, you can only park on the road. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, convenient parking centers. Genuinely, though, for real, the feminism leaves my body in the winter. And I'm like, I can't dig my car out. Like, I need help. I usually end up doing it by myself. But I usually make my stepdad do it. I really appreciate this email. And I think there's lots of good thoughts in here. And I think this comes down to a problem that I think a lot of media has, where they just see Christianity as the regular, you know what I mean? So we have these canonically Christian characters be able to do lots of holiday things within their scope of what they do in a celebration, but they also get to do lots of other things on top of that while doing it, going to a Christmas tree farm, and that's just regular. You know what I mean? And I think it's really interesting that, you know, they forget that they're Jewish half the time. They don't get to they don't get to casually eat latkes as a family. They don't get to play the dreidel as a family. They have to just go to a restaurant and, you know, forget their Jewishness. It's really interesting to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do want to acknowledge that while, you know, Christmas did start as a Christian holiday, especially in the U.S., it is now just the default.
Yeah, it's just a default
winter holiday.
Sure.
So it is not unrealistic for Glee to be Christmas is super pervasive in December because shoot, I went to high school with Jewish kids and in class, they still had to participate in Christmas activities because it's the default holiday in the U.S., which, you know, is a whole conversation.
Yeah, totally.
But so I don't think it's unrealistic that these Jewish characters are at a Christmas tree farm and all of that stuff. But going off what you said, Molly, I totally agree, especially Rachel is Jewish, and it is a fact about her character, but it's not talked about nearly enough. But Puck has always been, of the Jewish characters on the show, the one who is, like, most proud of his heritage and the one who, like, speaks about his religion, like, the most and what it means to him.
He talks about, like, his Jewishness in relation to his, like, family, his sister and his mom. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, a shot of him and his mom with the Hanukkah, like, we have plenty of shots of these other characters where they're not like, and here's a lesson on, like, how you celebrate Christmas. But we just see, like, oh, this scene is happening and they're around the Christmas tree and that we know what that means. Mm-hmm. Like, I fully believe that Puck would be celebrating Hanukkah and be proud of it based on what we know about this character. So why not have that same dynamic, but instead of, like, being around a Christmas tree, he and his family are around a Hanukkah.
Absolutely.
And we get to see more of that heritage. Yeah, I think that is a huge missed opportunity.
Totally. Well, Molly, thank you so much for your thoughts and your message. I'm so proud of you for getting through 3/4 of your semester abroad. You are so awesome. We're so proud of you. Awesome. We're so proud of you. Give Copenhagen a kiss from us.
Go kiss the Little Mermaid statue.
Oh, fun. I've always wanted to see that. Up next, we have a message from Suzanne.
Hey, Lena and Ian. Suzanne, 42. She, her, recovering Gleek. Mini spoiler from the future. Brittany receives money for being a Cheerio. Quote from the end of season 4. It is true that members of the Cheerios received illegal salaries and kickbacks. Last year alone, I made $5,000. And she was on the cover of Cheerleading Magazine. And remember in season 2 when she was a trendsetter for wearing Rachel's look and was in Teen Vogue? If she had been saving all that up since her freshman year, she could have quite a little nest egg. I think Brittany S. Pierce is actually the smartest, most likely to succeed person from the Glee Club. Sincerely, Suzanne in Pennsylvania.
I love this thought.
Suzanne, you're so right.
Yeah.
No wonder she's buying people Teslas. No wonder she's giving them tickets to Saint-Tropez.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany S. Pierce is an icon.
Yeah, I know. I totally forgot, though, that she was in Teen Vogue and she was on the cover of a magazine. So she's probably, like, a big deal.
Yeah, honestly, I 100% buy that Brittany is, like, an influencer.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Well, she also has a web show.
Mm-hmm.
That's just true. Well, I guess she has money. She's got money. Suzanne, thank you so much for this message. Honestly, lots to think about. And honestly, I agree, too. She is the most likely to succeed person from Glee Club. I love that.
Yeah.
Up next, we have a message from Nadia.
Hi, Glean and Gleena. I apologize that this is a few weeks late. I am a few episodes behind and working hard to catch up. Because Glee was taken off streaming, we eBayed the DVDs because we are dinosaurs and it's 2008, I guess. However, the benefit of the DVDs is that we get extras, including little featurettes about the new cast and sets, but also there are deleted scenes. Disc 1, episodes 1 through 4, has this deleted scene from The New Rachel that I found on YouTube, which explains everything about why Will has such a stick up his butt about suddenly being so exclusive with his precious Glee Club and callously rejecting great earnest kids who just want to be included in this club for everyone. It's because of Sue. Apparently, one Miss Sue Sylvester is back on her exclusive bullshit and encourages Will to be, quote, ruthless and to, quote, not dilute the Glee Club brand and not let any mediocre kids in now that they are national champs. Because sure, it makes total sense that they are rock stars and not total losers after winning a national championship. Sure. Will is a little conflicted, but at least it shows him considering recruiting our girl, Dubstep Girl, but then Ruthless Sue convinces him otherwise, and they even address the we need 12 kids for sectionals thing by Sue saying, that's months away, cross that bridge when you get there. Read, we'll add the Glee Project winner, don't you worry, audience. Why was this scene cut? It makes so much sense, and it allows me to be mad at Will for making wrong choices rather than the writers of the show, which I prefer because it makes sense. My partner AJ thinks it's because of the heinous blue balls joke at the start of the scene, which, honestly, fair. However, the end of the scene also features a Tanya Harding reference, which I thought was hilarious. I'd love to know your thoughts on this. I'm mad at Ryan Murphy for cutting this. Justice for Dubstep Girl, Nadia, she, her.
I watched this clip and I am so mad that it wasn't in. Like, literally everything that we were talking about in our episode is like, could be fixed with this one conversation. And I honestly kind of agree with your partner that, like, there's some, like, weird sex jokes in there that, like, probably, you know, are one of the reasons it got caught, or, like, for time or something. But genuinely, I just have this problem with all of the cutscenes I see on Glee that I'm like, what? Like, what is the process here when you decide to keep something versus, like, to cut something? Because so many times I've seen, like, deleted scenes that are so awesome and, like, really, like, fix a lot of my problems with Glee. Or, like, there are scenes in Glee that I'm like, why is this in over that? I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would imagine it's probably cut for time. I think most of Glee stuff is cut for time because they're always trying to shove so much in the episode.
Yeah. Remember when they tried to have long episodes? That was crazy.
Oh, yeah, that the 1 week in season two when they got a supersized episode. Shoot. But, like, this is what aggravates me about Glee, is it's what are we prioritizing? This episode, The New Rachel, has six entire musical numbers. And because Glee needs that sweet, sweet iTunes coin, they prioritize Blaine singing It's Time by Imagine Dragons. We know, like, Darren Criss is an incredible performer. He's had enough solos on this show.
Yeah.
The song also, like, does not really further the plot. The scene after where he tells Kurt to move to New York is enough. And so, like, literally taking its time out of this episode would not, like, there would be no gap. Like, nothing would be missing from the episode. Whereas this scene left us with so many questions and felt like very out of character for Will for no reason, and felt like these writers weren't paying attention. And it's just annoying that these writers would rather have plot holes than, you know, not be getting some sweet, sweet Darren Criss money off of iTunes.
Also, I mean, we could think about it in terms of, like, they already paid to, like, have this song recorded. They already paid all of the extras. They already paid, like, all of the dancers, all of the choreographers, all of the crew that day versus the scene with, like, Sue and Will.
That's true.
That's just, like, a couple extras in those two. Like, I'm sure, like cost-wise, like, it would suck to cut a song rather than, like, just a scene.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just, like, it makes so much sense. And you even see him. Which also, Sue kind of says, she's like, you know, don't dilute the brand by bringing in these kids who aren't passionate about your club. They just, like, want to be part of the next cool thing, which I think is true for, you know, Stoner Brett, who just showed up to auditions and didn't really care. But freaking DeWanda the Dubstep Girl was passionate about that club.
I know. And he was going to add her in. That hurts my feelings. He was going to add her in.
Yeah.
I'm sad. Love you, DeWanda, for real. But Nadia, thanks so much for sending this to us. It is very illuminating. Lots to think about. I really appreciate it. Up next, we have a message from Emily.
Hi, Ian and Lena. Longtime listener, first time writer, Emily number 10 bazillion here. I'm American, but I'm studying abroad in Greece right now, so I think I deserve at least half of the international listener jingle. I'm writing to you with thoughts about the Kurt vignette. While I totally get where both of you are coming from with liking the Blaine in New York stuff, it actually really rubbed me the wrong way. As someone who recently went through a long-distance breakup, I could not imagine anything more horrifying than a surprise Christmas visit from my ex, supported and paid for by my parent. When breakups like this happen, the thing you need more than anything is time, both to grieve the relationship and learn who you are without the other person. Since Kurt was the one who initiated the breakup, Blaine showing up unannounced completely removes his autonomy in the grieving and healing process. On top of this, it's absolutely insane to me that Bert would take this decision away from Kurt. When you make the tough decision to break up with someone so close to you like Kurt did, having the support of those closest to you to validate your feelings and decision is so, so important. In the episode, Bert makes it painstakingly clear that he's on Blaine's side in his quest to win Kurt back and invites him into their family Christmas traditions without asking Kurt, both of which are huge betrayals. He then has the audacity to ignore Kurt as he bros out with Blaine and not so subtly asks him about his future plans. I'm normally a huge Bert stan, but the uncomfortable situation Bert forced Kurt into in this episode made me feel like crying for poor Kurt. Anyway, I've been listening to this podcast since I started college, and I can say without a doubt that you guys have changed my life. Your compassion and vulnerability have gotten me through some really tough times, and your move to NYC inspired me to accept an internship in NYC. Although moving to a huge city where I don't know anyone is terrifying, as silly as it sounds, it's brought me a lot of comfort to know my two favorite podcasters are going to be there with me. Lots of love and consensual forehead kisses to you both, Emily. Emily, congratulations on your internship.
Yay, that's so awesome. So proud of you. That's super awesome. I'm really, like, that's really, moving to a big city where you don't know anyone is straight up not for punks. So I really commend you. And I know you'll do great, for real. And I really appreciate this email. I don't think I thought about it like that. I think this world of Glee has really, like, you know, they really operate in this world where you know that Kurt and Blaine are gonna end up together, you know? So it's like the rules of regular relationships are kind of out the window sometimes in my head, and I forget how this might not be the appropriate thing for them to do. So I really appreciated your perspective on this, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Glee that I just... except works differently than it does in real life,
yeah.
Which, like you said, this is one of the big ones. It's these, like, written in the stars couples, mm-hmm. where it's just like, yeah, this isn't healthy, but I know the show is never going to acknowledge that it's not healthy, and the yeah. show wants these characters to end up together, so, like, sure.
Yeah, honestly, I like, thinking about it, if my, like, mom was to come to New York, first of all, I'd be like, what the heck are you even doing here? And then if she paid for another person, let alone the person who just cheated on me, to come to New York too, and impede on our family time, I think I'd be super uncomfortable. And I think I'd be like, oh, God, mom, what the heck are you doing here? So I absolutely understand where you're coming from, for sure. I don't, yeah.
No, I think in real life, this would be terrible, especially, like you say, Emily, the fact that Bert is very clearly, like, trying to push him to get back together. And it's not even like, you know, they broke up because long distance was too hard. And even in that scenario, it still would be unhealthy. But no, they broke up because Blaine fully cheated on Kurt. And Bert's just like, well, I don't know. I brought him here. We'll see what happens. Yeah. I don't know. Blaine, have you thought about where you're going to college? Could it be Niata? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And I know that, like, they're pushing the narrative and, like, lesson of the holidays that is, like, keep your loved ones close. Like, don't push them away. But, you know, oftentimes it's like, it's okay if the person who cheated on you or the person who hurt you, you know, is not at your family Christmas party. Like, that's okay. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So, yeah. I didn't even think about it this way.
I think so much media, maybe just it's the media that I've been consuming lately, but I feel like so much media has this mentality of, like, you know, this person in this relationship meant so much to you, and that's great, and you should be appreciative of that and, like, take it in moving forward and let it, like, affect who you are as a person. But also, like, in order to keep living your life, you need to let go of it. Like, you can't just, like, keep hanging on to this thing that isn't there anymore. And I feel like Glee is so the opposite narrative. Mm-hmm. Like, Glee is always like, how dare you consider letting go of past relationships?
Yeah.
How dare you try and move on?
I know.
You better keep coming back to this person. You better keep them. Because I think, you know, I think it is healthy that to not like harbor resentment towards your ex if they didn't do anything horrible to you, which I mean, Blaine kind of did do something horrible to Kurt. But you know, if it was like an amicable like breakup, I think it's an important part of moving on to like let go of resentment. But Glee is like, no, you let them back into your life as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And then who knows? Hopefully one day you end it together again.
It is like fully the opposite of like, if you love someone, let them go. And if they're actually yours, they come back. It is like, no, if you love someone, hold the fuck on, even if you're not together.
So you see like, white knuckle it, baby. Come on. Like,
never let go. Holler, you know, I hear you. Emily, I absolutely appreciate this message so much. Can't wait for you to come to NYC if you ever see us on the street. You better say hi. Good luck. Up next, we have a message from Aaron.
Hi, Lena and Ian. The amount of Marvel references you made in this episode literally made my nerd heart so happy. I had a huge Glee phase last year, and I'm currently in a Marvel phase, so those two things together made me incredibly excited. This doesn't really have to do with Glee, but I would love if you talked more about Marvel. Who are your favorite characters? What are your favorite movies? Thank you for making my Wednesdays better, because I hate Wednesdays. Love, Aaron, she, her. Aaron, thank you so much.
Yeah.
The only one who stayed on theme for the Minnesota of Madness, I don't know why so many people were sending us emails about Glee. I was like, this is a Marvel podcast. I know, I was here talking about Doctor
Strange, you guys.
Come on. Yeah, like, embarrassing for all of you. My gosh. All right, let's get into some Marvel talk.
We actually, Ian and I just saw, oh my gosh, I got a frog in my throat.
Lena's getting choked up just thinking about it.
We saw Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness yesterday, so this could not have come at a better time. Let me tell you who my favorite characters are. So, well, let's both just talk about it. I'd say my number one favorite character, for real, I can't help it, I can't do anything about it, is the Vision. I love Vision. I just love him so much. I think he's so awesome. I love, like, I love him and Wanda's relationship, like, in, like, Civil War. I love WandaVision. I think Vision in Infinity War. Oh my gosh, I could go on and on. I think Vision is probably my favorite character. I just love him. Also, it doesn't hurt the fact that I'm in love with Paul Bettany. Like, for real, he's my husband. Who is one of your favorite characters?
So, for a long time, Captain America was my favorite character, and Wanda was my second favorite character, and that was true for, you know, most of the MCU. I mean, since Age of Ultron, when she was introduced. I think since WandaVision, that has swapped. Yeah. And maybe it's recency bias because, you know, spoilers for the MCU, but this is a movie that came out like 3 years ago. Captain America's been retired, so I'm not seeing him anymore, and I'm seeing a lot of Wanda. I don't know, but Wanda is my current fave.
Yeah, good fave. I think she's my second fave.
Ugh, she's the best.
Yeah.
I love Captain America, which I know is like a hot take for some people, but I love that he has a very strong set of values and he will stick to those values no matter what. And it is both like such a positive character trait in the sense that when his boss, when S.H.I.E.L.D. is like having him do stuff that don't really fit into his values, he's able to question that authority and be like, wait, actually, I'm not just like going to be a mindless foot soldier. Like, this doesn't seem right to me. But then it's also a very interesting character flaw. Mm-hmm. In the sense that he can be so convinced that he's right and he can be so hard-headed and so unwilling to compromise that it, like, causes big rifts. And I just think that that is very exciting to have one characteristic that can both be such a virtue and a vice, depending on how it's used. So I love me some Captain America. Also, the First Avenger had Marvel's first musical numbers. Like, what's not to love about that?
right, absolutely.
And then I love Wanda. I love a magic user, first of all. Also a big Doctor Strange fan for that reason. Love a magic user. Also just a traumatized person.
Totally. Oh, absolutely.
I'm much more interested in flawed characters. Mm-hmm. Like, I do genuinely, I know a ton of people have so much beef with Tony. I think it was so interesting to have the lead of the franchise be someone who, like, as a person was kind of unlikable, mm-hmm. but then, like, you know, had a good heart at the base of it. I think that's really interesting. And so I love just the arc of Wanda just constantly losing absolutely everything over and over again.
Give her a break, for real.
And every time she tries to rebuild her life, it just gets knocked down again. Mm-hmm. And seeing her just, like, slowly succumb to it and slowly just be like, why do I even keep trying if things just keep going wrong? And reach a point where she's like, you know what? I've, like, tried to do the right thing, and I've tried to, like, be a good person and do all this stuff, and things just keep getting worse for me. So, like, what's even the point of trying right now? And having that moment of selfishness and just being so over all the crap that she's gone through. Love me some Wanda. Also, yeah. It doesn't help. I mean, it doesn't hurt that Elizabeth Olsen is, like, such an incredible actor.
Oh, I am in love with her. I think she's the best. She is so good.
Thank goodness they're, like, finally using her to her potential, because I love me some Wanda in, like, Age of Ultron and Civil War, but like, shoot, she is not doing much.
No, absolutely.
She is not doing much. I remember when WandaVision premiered and they released the first two episodes of WandaVision on the same day, and Wanda and Vision had more screen time in those first two episodes of WandaVision than they had in every MCU appearance prior combined.
Well, I remember before that episode, those episodes had come out, I watched, like, everything that, like, Vision and Wanda were in to try and, like, you know, get prepped again. And I was like, oh my God, they're actually really just super minor characters, which is so crazy to me because, A, I find them just genuinely very likable as characters and really interesting. And it's really interesting that, like, these two side characters are all, like, in love and, like, sacrificing themselves. Like, what's going on? Like, that's very interesting to me. And I don't know, you know, that's just so, I don't know. I'm so glad they got their own TV show because, geez, they are the best.
WandaVision.
Holy moly, WandaVision is so good. I would say it's one of my, like, favorite things the MCU has ever done.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever talked about this on the podcast. I, like, think that the WandaVision finale was, like, for how ambitious that show was, it was a very, in my opinion, safe and kind of, like, generic MCU way to wrap it up. But that notwithstanding, I think that is, like, maybe the coolest thing that Marvel has ever done. I love WandaVision. I rewatched it in preparation for Multiverse of Madness. It is just so, so good. And I also love it because no one fights until the finale, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not stupid. They're superhero movies. I'm not a person who's like, why are they fighting? Like, they're superheroes. Of course they're going to be fighting. But I just feel like there's so many superhero movies that are just about the fights.
And it's something just mindlessly that I think, violent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, and something that I think sets Marvel apart is that they really do have interesting characters at the center of these fights. So to have this nine episode long TV show where the primary focus is, like, the characters and it being character driven and the fight is an afterthought was very exciting.
I agree. Some of my other favorite MCU things, I love Guardians, for real. I love both those movies a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I love Thor Ragnarok. I find that, like, my favorite Marvel movies are the ones that, like, have elements of other things in them. So I like the funny ones. For instance, to talk about Doctor Strange a little bit, I like that that one was also funny and had an element of, like, horror in it as well. I think, you know, I love I love Winter Soldier. I really love that movie. But it is, like, pure, like, by the book superhero movie. There are, like, funny moments in there, but I wouldn't, like, classify it as a comedy at all. But the thing I like about Ragnarok and the Guardians movies is I would call those movies comedies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Guardians 1 is... Is it still? It was my favorite Marvel movie for a long time, but I just love Infinity War so much that I think Infinity War beats it out. But man, Guardians 1 truly like changed the fabric of my reality when I first saw it. It is so good.
Oh my God. You know what I also remembered? There was, so I worked in a box office with for a Shakespeare festival for so long, for like 2 years, but I worked in there in the off season and people were not calling ever, but we still had to be in there, and I would be in there with a couple of different people, and one of my coworkers and I, we would watch Marvel movies all the time, and it was like our goal to like get through all of them, and honestly we made it through a bunch of them like while we were at work, and we watched Endgame, and this was a phase I went through where I watched Endgame what was it? Like 2021, was it just last year? Where I watched Endgame like 6 times in like a month, like something crazy. And I don't know why. And I think it was because like I had watched it when it came out and then I kind of like had space in between. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I watched it and I said, this is the most impactful movie of my entire existence. I need to watch it again. And then I watched 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 it again. That movie is like 3 hours long. And I don't even think it's the best MCU movie. I just think it's the most impactful movie of all time. It's amazing.
I know there's people who like really, really, really dislike Endgame. And hear me out. Your opinion's valid. You're entitled to that opinion. And it's
so good.
It's not my favorite MCU movie. Like I said, I love Infinity War, but shoot, I truly think that for a finale, in my opinion, it is like a perfect finale.
Yeah, I violently sob every time. It's so good.
I know that fan service stuff can really bog down a film franchise and can really bog down a movie. But shoot, when it's like the finale of 10 years, I think they're entitled to put some fan service in there. Absolutely. It's just like, it's such a good celebration of the movies that came before and a celebration of like these characters who are retiring. And God, that movie is so, so, so incredible. I love it so much. Yeah, I'm a big Endgame fan.
Me too.
Big, big Endgame fan.
So really loved the, I mean, I really love, I was talking to you about this the other day. I feel like I love Marvel in the appropriate amount for me, where I like love almost everything that I see. There's not a lot that I'm like super displeased by because I don't really have a lot of like preconceived notions about what I'm going to see. I'm just pretty open to seeing anything. So, and like, I just think my anxiety level can't handle putting it any higher in how much I like it. Do you know what I mean? So I like genuinely like all of it for real. Like there's not much that I don't like. I loved that Spider-Man movie that just came out. Holy moly. That was so crazy. So yeah. So like genuinely like don't not like any of it. I enjoy all of it.
I also like, I will defend the MCU till I die because I understand the superhero movies are going to be the death of Hollywood. They're going to be the death of cinema. I think who knows? But I do think truly it is a valid concern that people express where it's like, you know, Marvel can make whatever the heck movie they want and release it and it's going to make $1 billion.
Yeah.
And like they don't have to put any thought into it. Whereas like these indie voices who like really have unique perspectives, like can't get anyone to come see their movie. And I think that is so valid. And I think that's so true. I would also say that Marvel tends to put in more thought to their superhero movies than like an average superhero movie does. But I also am aware that like, you know, Marvel movies aren't changing the way that people like view society as a whole. But also, you know, there's a place in entertainment for just fun escapism.
Totally.
But dang it, I will defend till I die that Marvel, like, I think we're used to it now because every studio has tried to copy this. But what Marvel did, and I think we forget this, was such a huge risk and was so ambitious to do an interconnected, like, movie universe that had absolutely never been done to this scale, and it had certainly never been planned out to this scale. You had like Alien versus Predator, which was an afterthought where they were like, well, we have these two movies, so I don't know, what if retroactively they exist in the same universe and they can interact? Whereas to have started with Iron Man and take this like a brand new company, because Disney had not bought them yet, and using one of their freaking C-list characters, because they had sold all of their A-list characters to Fox and Sony, and to be like, you know, we're going to try and replicate what the world is like in the comics, where all of these superheroes have their own adventures but live in the same planet and can interact. That was such an ambitious and original idea. And I think the reason that no other studio has successfully been able to do it is because Marvel really put a lot of love and care into that idea, and they really planned it out, and they really established these characters and showed a lot of love for these characters and had us fall in love with these characters before they started throwing them together. Whereas other studios are just like, their main priority is, oh, we need a cinematic universe. How can we get there as fast as possible? Mm-hmm. Whereas Marvel was like, no, we want our audience to fall in love with these characters. And then once that has happened, we'll put them in the same room and see what happens from there.
Mm-hmm. I love Marvel stuff.
Oh, big MCU fan, baby.
Totally, totally. I mean, I obviously hope that in the future, I think, you know, like with anything, there are problems with it. Like in the future, I hope there are more like, you know, solo women movies. I hope there are more like people of color in the MCU for real. But I think they're on the right track, I hope. You know what I mean? I think, I don't know. I just really like the MCU. And I do think, frankly, like the conversation of like, with great power comes great responsibility is a worthwhile lesson, and I like to learn it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gosh, I love Marvel movies. Aaron, thanks for asking us. We really appreciate it. Can we bang out the relative pitch game in 5 minutes?
I believe in us. Okay. You're going first. It is Feliz Navidad, White Christmas, Hanukkah, Hanukkah, Jingle Bell Rock, The First Noel. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let's do Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Okay. I'm just going to go for it. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles may be miles away. That's probably wrong, but I'm trying to bang this out.
Okay, for Have Yourself, you did A flat, C, E flat.
Ace.
Okay, that's a B, D, F, you are a step flat. Damn. Sorry.
That's okay. Okay, I want you to sing Feliz Navidad.
Okay. Feliz Navidad. Ooh, my voice is rough today. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Okay. I think Feliz is a G to a C. I can already tell I'm off. That I was also a step flat. That was
nice.
An A to a D, so we're equally flat.
Yeah.
So that means
if we're grading on a bell curve,
double negative, a positive.
Test.
Yeah.
Perfect.
We win.
We win.
We were right.
Great. Thanks, guys. We were both right. We were both right. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening. Can't wait to talk to you on Wednesday. We're talking about Sadie Hawkins. If you have thoughts on that episode you'd like to share with us, you can send them to recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
All right. Love all of you. Have a good week.
Have a good week. We'll see you around. I hope you have the best week ever, for real. Here's mini kiss on your mini forehead if you accept.
Go spread some mini glee. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/recorde.